Okay, let's get into this. You know, sometimes the most urgent messages, the really critical ones about where we stand, they don't always come from the usual places, right?
Absolutely. And when you're facing something that many people are calling a global crisis, well, it feels like any potential path forward, any proposed solution really deserves a proper look, a deep dive.
Even if it seems a little unconventional at first glance.
Exactly. It's easy to just brush things off if they don't fit our, existing ideas. But sometimes those are the perspectives that actually offer something new. Our job here is just to explore what's being presented in the material we've got.
Right. So today we're doing that deep dive into a particular document, and it really doesn't hold back. It paints a pretty stark picture that the planet's in an emergency situation right now.
And that the signs are basically everywhere.
Yeah, and what really jumps out is that it offers up this one single, very urgent solution it claims can head off catastrophe.
This source material argues that the most effective way, and it stresses the fastest way, to sort of turn things around and bring about what it calls a better era.
Is what exactly?
It's a global switch to an organic plant-based diet.
Okay, so that's the core idea we're digging into today. Our mission for this deep dive is to really unpack the arguments laid out in this document. We'll look at the warnings it highlights.
Specific signs it points to.
What it says is the root cause behind it all, and then really get into the solution it's proposing and the actions it suggests. So think of this document as our main text for today's exploration.
And it starts right off the bat with this intense sense of planetary emergency. It uses that image of a burning house, to really drive home the urgency.
Burning a house, yeah, that's strong.
And sets a very tight deadline, using phrases like, the hour is late, and even, quite dramatically, suggesting we might only have, what, 4 or 5 years' time? Finito.
Finito. Wow, okay. That certainly underlines the alarm bell it's trying to ring. And it points to specific environmental changes as evidence, right? Like rising sea levels.
That's a big one it discusses.
Yeah.
It makes a pretty startling claim that 18 island nations are already submerged, gone. And it mentions others like Tuvalu and Tonga already having to plan evacuations or migrations.
And it's not just islands, is it? It warns about major cities too.
Yeah, big coastal cities around the world. It specifically names London, Bangkok, New York. It talks about sea level rise predictions. Some relatively small, like 9 centimeters, but also flags the potential for about 7 meters if the entire Greenland ice sheet were to melt, according to the source material.
7 meters? It's hard to even picture for coastal areas.
And it really is. And then moving inland, the source talks about glaciers melting and what that means for water supplies.
Right, the source for rivers and things.
Exactly. It mentions the Himalayas, crucial for billions of people downstream. It points to places like Glacier National Park, saying the glaciers there could be gone within a decade, based on its info.
Oh, a decade? Wow.
And the Colorado River going dry claims Peru's glaciers were already gone by 2015. The point it's making is the direct threat to fresh water access for, huge numbers of people.
So we've got water potentially disappearing in some crucial places, and then causing destruction in others through extreme weather.
That's the other side it highlights. Extreme weather events getting worse. It claims hurricane intensity and duration have doubled in the last 30 years.
Doubled?
Yeah. And Category 4 and 5 storms, the really destructive ones, doubling in frequency over the last 35 years. It gives figures for devastating floods, too, like over 6,300 deaths in 59 countries in just part of 2010 alone.
And the economic cost must be huge.
It mentions that, too. $222 billion in economic losses just from disasters in 2010, according to the source.
And then there's the opposite problem, not enough water, droughts.
Exactly. Intensifying droughts, desertification spreading. It claims this affects over 1 billion people in more than 100 countries. Rivers drying up, aquifers depleting.
Which probably leads to other issues.
Right. Connects us to more wildfires. And also insect infestations that thrive in warmer, drier conditions.
Okay, so land, water, weather.
Yeah.
What about the oceans? Does the source cover that?
Oh, yeah, heavily. It talks about overfishing, claiming 90% of the big fish populations are already gone.
90%.
That's the figure it uses. And it predicts a total collapse of world fisheries by 2050. And here's a specific detail it mentions. It claims a third of all the fish caught globally aren't even eaten by people. They're fed to livestock.
Fed to livestock, okay.
It also highlights the spread of dead zones, these areas in the ocean with too little oxygen, often from pollution runoff. It says there are over 400 of these globally now, and it mentions ocean acidification as another growing problem.
This all sounds pretty dire. Is there a point where it becomes unstoppable, according to this document?
that's a major concern it raises. It talks about the danger of runaway global warming.
Runaway. What does that mean in this context?
It's about feedback loops. Processes that, once started, accelerate themselves. The source focuses particularly on thawing permafrost in the Arctic.
Releasing gases.
Exactly.
Okay.
And methane, hydrates frozen methane on the ocean floor, melting. It makes a huge claim here, suggesting there are 400 gigatons of methane locked in the tundra that could potentially trigger a kind of chain reaction if released.
And methane is more potent than CO2.
Much more potent, according to the source. It says 72 times more potent at trapping heat over the short term. It even brings up the potential release of hydrogen sulfide gas, which it links to mass extinctions in Earth's deep past.
So the picture the source paints is of multiple systems under extreme stress, maybe close to, what, tipping points?
Precisely. Tipping points is the term.
Yeah.
And it really stresses that if we cross those points, the changes could become irreversible, which is why it argues for such urgent, immediate action.
Okay. So that's the problem statement, the warnings. Where does the source say all this is coming from? What's the root cause, according to this document?
Well, this is where the argument gets really focused. The source presents a very clear central claim. The root cause of basically all these interconnected crises is the global livestock industry.
The entire industry as the main driver. That's a huge claim.
It is. And it backs it up with some pretty specific numbers and assertions. For instance, it claims the livestock sector contributes as much or possibly even more to global warming than the entire global energy sector combined.
More than energy, how much does it say?
The figure it uses is at least 80% of global warming emissions.
80%. Wow. Okay. That's significantly higher than commonly cited figures from, say, the UN IPCC. So this source is putting forward a very different calculation.
It is. And it presents that 80% figure as a core part of his argument.
Yeah.
It also points to livestock as the number one driver of deforestation.
Especially in places like the Amazon.
Exactly. It claims 80% of Amazon rainforest clearing is for cattle grazing. And it uses a really vivid image. It says an area of rainforest the size of a football field is destroyed every second just to produce hamburgers.
Every second. That really hits home. What about pollution? Water pollution specifically?
It calls livestock the single largest source of water pollution. It cites data suggesting that agriculture, and specifically meat production within agriculture, is responsible for about 75% of water pollution in the U.S.
And it gives examples of the scale, right?
Yeah, some pretty intense comparisons, like a single large pig farm, say 500,000 pigs, generating more waste than the entire human population of Manhattan, which is about 1.5 million people.
More waste than Manhattan.
That's the comparison it draws.
Yeah.
Or Ireland's pigs, apparently numbering around 1.8 million, producing more waste than the country's entire human population. Just to give a sense of the scale of manure and effluent.
Okay, so waste is a big issue. What about just efficiency, using resources?
That's another major point. The source argues raising animals for food is incredibly inefficient. It makes these specific claims that producing meat uses up to 17 times more land.
17 times?
0.14 times more water and 10 times more energy compared to producing an equivalent amount of calories or protein from plants for a vegan diet.
And how does that connect to things like world hunger?
Directly, according to this document, it argues all that land and grain currently used to feed livestock could instead be used to feed hungry people. Billions of them.
Billions? Does it give numbers?
It claims the grains fed to livestock globally could feed nearly 2 billion people. And it breaks it down to the U.S., stating that 90% of the soy, 80% of the corn, and 70% of all grain grown in the U.S. goes to livestock feed.
Instead of people.
Right. And it says that amount alone could feed 800 million people. It then makes this very stark connection, stating that a child dies from hunger-related causes every 5 seconds. And it implicitly links this tragedy to how global food resources are allocated, prioritizing animal feed over direct human consumption.
That's a powerful and frankly disturbing connection it's drawing. Does it also touch on human health impacts?
It does. It argues that eating animal products is a major contributor to many chronic diseases, things like cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity. It claims these cause millions of deaths every year.
And beyond chronic disease.
It also links meat production itself to the emergence of dangerous infectious diseases that jump from animals to humans, zoonotic diseases. It cites examples like mad cow disease, swine flu, bird flu, and it even mentions the health risks faced by workers within the meat industry itself.
So to kind of crystallize its argument about livestock being the root problem, The source includes some quotes, right?
Yes, it does. It quotes Maneka Gandhi, for instance, saying that changing what we eat is crucial because, in her words cited by the source, it is meat that is destroying most of our forests. It is meat that is creating diseases.
And it mentions UN figures, too.
It cites Dr. Henning Steinfeld from the FAO, calling livestock one of the most significant contributors to today's most serious environmental problems. And it quotes Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, former head of the IPCC, describing meat as a very carbon-intensive commodity.
Mm-hmm.
These are used to bolster that central claim about the livestock industry.
Okay, so if the diagnosis is planetary emergency and the identified cause is global livestock industry, what's the cure proposed by this document?
It's very direct, very clear. The proposed solution is an immediate global shift to an organic, plant-based diet, a vegan diet, essentially.
Immediate and global. And it presents this as the solution.
Yes. It argues this is the quickest, most effective, and really the only comprehensive way to tackle that whole list of problems, environmental, resource, health, hunger, that it links back to livestock.
And what benefits does it claim would come from this shift? It must list quite a few.
Oh, it does. A whole cascade of positive changes. First and foremost, a massive reduction in global warming. It claims going vegan globally could stop 80% or more of emissions.
80% again.
Yes. And it emphasizes that cutting methane from livestock is the single fastest way to actually cool the planet, because methane breaks down relatively quickly compared to CO2.
What about the cost? Climate mitigation is projected to cost trillions.
The source claims huge savings there, too. It suggests a global vegan shift could wipe 80% off those projected mitigation costs. That's a figure like $32 trillion saved, off an estimated $40 trillion needed globally.
$32 trillion saved. That's enormous.
It's a staggering figure. Then there's resource conservation. It claims this shift would use vastly less land, 4.5 times less land overall.
Freeing it up for
what?
Reforestation? Feeding people?
Both, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
It also claims it would conserve up to 70% of clean water resources.
Yeah.
And obviously free up huge amounts of grain currently fed to animals, which could then address hunger.
So warming reduction, cost savings, resource conservation. What else?
The list keeps going. Reduced pollution, leading to cleaner air and water. Big improvements in human health, which would mean lower healthcare costs. Protection for biodiversity, both on land and in the oceans.
And presumably, an end to animal suffering in farms.
Absolutely, that's a major point. The elimination of suffering for billions of animals raised for food. The source is also explicit that animal products includes dairy and eggs, citing related cruelty and environmental impacts.
Does it put it down to the individual level at all?
It does. It gives a figure claiming that for an average U.S. household, just making the switch to vegan saves about 4.5 tons of CO2 equivalent emissions per year.
Okay, so that's what the proposed solution and its claimed benefits, but how? How does the document suggest we actually achieve this massive global transformation? It must call for action from different groups.
Yes, it definitely does.
Yeah.
It has calls to action for several key players. Governments, for starters, are told they must take urgent action.
Like what kind of action?
Well, setting an example is one thing. It suggests leaders themselves should go vegan, but also actively promoting the animal-free lifestyle through information campaigns, maybe even laws. It draws a parallel, suggesting meat could eventually be banned or restricted like smoking or certain drugs have been.
Banning meat, that's a strong suggestion.
It is. It also says governments should support the transition, financially subsidizing organic vegan farming, setting up quality standards, and protecting farmers, maybe livestock farmers, as they shift to other livelihoods.
Does it mention any governments already moving in this direction, even slightly?
It gives a few examples it sees as positive steps. Some initiatives in the UK, Cincinnati, encouraging residents to eat less meat, some schools in Hawaii looking at vegan options, and it highlights the president of Formosa, which is Taiwan, promoting eating more vegetables. Small steps, but it points to them.
Okay, so governments have a role. Who else? The media.
Big role for the media, according to the source. It says they have a duty to use their massive influence to broadcast the urgency of the situation and this proposed vegan solution.
How should they do that?
Well, again, it suggests media figures could lead by example by going vegan themselves. And it proposes very direct actions, like suggesting every newspaper should print the simple message, be veg, make peace, every single day.
Be veg, make peace. Interesting slogan. What about other influential groups, like religious leaders?
They're called upon, too. The source argues they should use their moral authority to speak out, adopt the lifestyle, and guide their followers towards it. It suggests that teaching supporting compassion which it argues align with veganism, can be found in many different scriptures and traditions, mentioning figures like Jesus and Buddha as examples.
And education. Children.
Yes, education is key, especially for children. The document argues kids should be told the truth about the crisis and the solution. It sees children with their innocent hearts as potential heroes who can embrace veganism and influence others. It suggests supporting things like vegan options in schools and school gardening programs.
So governments, media, religious leaders, education. But what about just regular people, individuals?
This is where the source places perhaps the most power. It makes a very direct argument. Individuals, as consumers, hold the ultimate key. By simply choosing not to buy animal products. The source claims that if enough people stop buying meat, dairy, and eggs, the industry will just disappear. It literally says the power is in our hands.
So consumer choice driving everything.
That's the core message for individuals. It even offers practical tips, like a section called How to Veg for Starters, and encourages simple actions like planting your own vegetables or planting trees.
And beyond just buying habits, any other individual actions?
Yes. It encourages actively lobbying, you know, writing emails, letters, faxes to government officials, talking to anyone who might have influence. And then there's a slightly less conventional point.
Which is?
Doing good deeds. The source suggests that generating positive energy through kindness and good actions actually helps create a sort of protective, loving atmosphere for the whole planet.
Okay, positive energy. That sounds like it's moving into a different dimension, beyond just the physical or political.
It definitely does. The source has a whole layer that explores these less conventional, you might say, spiritual aspects.
Like what? How does it connect spirituality to climate change and diet?
Well, for one, it suggests that natural disasters aren't just random physical events. It frames them as, partly, consequences of negative energy built up from human actions, things like hatred, violence, and especially the killing of animals.
So disasters as a kind of warning signal or a karmic effect?
Sort of both. A warning, yes, but also linked to this idea of cause and effect, what it calls bad karmic retribution. It uses the phrase, as we sow, so shall we reap.
And the vegan diet fits into this how?
It's presented as more than just practical. It's framed as a spiritual act, a way to expand compassion. By choosing not to harm animals, the source suggests individuals can break that negative cycle and place themselves in a sort of circle of love and protection.
Does it say anything specific about animals themselves in this context?
Yes, it speaks about them quite poetically. It claims animals have noble, vital roles on the planet and possess a loving quality. It even uses an abbreviation, LQ% that humans should try to emulate. Being kind to animals is seen as crucial for reversing our negative impact and raising our own consciousness.
Raising consciousness. That sounds like it's leading somewhere bigger.
It is. The source connects all this to a much larger, almost cosmic narrative. It posits that the Earth itself is undergoing a kind of evolution or transformation. Ascending to the higher galactic civilization is the phrase it uses.
Ascending. Wow. And humanity's role.
We're seen as being at a critical fork in the road. We can either continue towards collapse or make a leap into the golden era. It also calls this realizing the Eden dream.
A golden era, does it elaborate on that? Does it give examples?
It actually uses anecdotes about other planets. It tells these stories, suggesting that the fate of civilizations on planets like Venus and Mars depended on whether their inhabitants chose a path of compassion, specifically becoming vegan, and reached a higher level of consciousness. Those who didn't, it implies, faced destruction.
Stories about Venus and Mars being saved or lost based on diet, that's definitely unconventional.
It is. It's presented as part of this broader spiritual framework. The overall idea seems to be that by stopping violence, especially the killing of animals for food, humanity can generate this powerful, loving atmosphere.
And that atmosphere has effects.
Yes. It suggests this loving energy could even lead to positive contact with what it calls noble beings in the galaxy, extraterrestrial intelligence, essentially.
Okay. So wrapping up the spiritual dimension, the source seems to argue that saving the world isn't just about emissions and resources. It's an act of compassion that helps humans rediscover some kind of innate holiness.
Exactly. And that achieving this higher state of consciousness isn't just a nice side effect. It's actually necessary for humanity to be able to live peacefully and sustainably on a saved Earth.
Right. So we've covered a lot. The dire warnings, the finger pointed squarely at the livestock industry, the proposed vegan solution, the calls for action from governments to individuals, and this whole spiritual layer. What does digging into this specific source mean for you, listening right now?
Well, I think what's striking about this document is how it frames the enormous problems we face. It argues they aren't just complex issues needing complex technological fixes or slow political negotiations.
Yes.
Instead, it argues the core solution is actually found in a fundamental shift in our individual lifestyles and our entire way of thinking rooted in compassion and directly connected to very simple daily choices. Primarily, what we choose to put on our plates.
And the source is really insistent that this isn't just, you know, a personal preference or a lifestyle choice like any other.
Not at all. It presents it as a matter of life and death. For everyone. For the entire planet. There's no ambiguity in its message on that front.
And maybe the most powerful takeaway from the perspective of this source is the incredible amount of power it places right back in the hands of individuals. Especially as consumers.
Yeah, that idea that consumer choice alone, if exercised collectively, could fundamentally reshape huge global industries and, according to this source, literally save the world.
So just to quickly recap the core arguments we've explored from this material, a planet in immediate severe crisis.
The global livestock industry, identified as the primary culprit.
An urgent global shift to an organic, plant-based diet, presented as the single most effective, comprehensive solution.
And a call for action on all levels, physical, political, individual, and even spiritual, driven by compassion.
Which brings us to a final thought, something for you to consider, drawn directly from the perspective laid out in this document. If you take its claims at face value, the sheer severity of the crisis it describes, and the immense world-altering power it attributes to individual food choices, what does that imply about your role right now?
Yeah, what does it mean if a source argues that the key to averting global catastrophe, to ushering in a golden era, is potentially something as seemingly simple, yet profoundly challenging for many, as changing what you eat? Something to think about.